more Russian rockets hit Zaporizhia while Ukrainian forces retake more land.
That is so important now to deliver tanks to push Russia back to its borders.
Plus, is Russia moving closer to using a nuclear weapon?
I think it's more likely now than at any time since the end of the Cold War, for sure.
And later in the program, life rebounds in Bucha after Russia's massacre there. Today is Thursday, October 6th, 2022. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Reddish, in for Steve Miller. Russian rockets hit the Ukrainian city of Zaporizhia early Thursday, destroying residential buildings. The city is home to Europe's largest nuclear power plant, which makes any kind of attack on the area even more alarming. Associated Press reporter Karen Shamis reports.
Seven Russian rockets have slammed into residential buildings in Zaporizhia, a city close to Europe's biggest nuclear power plant. A fire engine is stationed next to what was once an apartment block, but is now a large hill of rubble. An immense and haunting plume of smoke rises from the debris as Zaporizhia's governor, Oleksandr Staruk, looks on. At night, when people were sleeping, the enemy carried out a rocket attack against residential houses. Two upper floors are destroyed. Entrances to the buildings are ruined. People were under the rubble. Amongst those caught in the attack was a three-year-old girl who was taken to hospital for treatment. The strikes came just hours after Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky announced the Ukraine military has retaken three more villages in one of the regions recently annexed by Russia. Speaking to leaders at the Organization of American States Assembly, Zelensky was determined that Ukraine will defeat Russia.
There is only one question. For us, right now, how many of our people Russia will manage to kill before it admits a defeat?
I'm Karen Chamas.
For the past 8 years, the Warsaw Security Forum has brought together experts on political, military, and security issues to find common solutions to the world's problems. Russia's war on Ukraine dominated this year's forum. I spoke to VOA Eastern European Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze for a debrief of what was said and what, if any, solutions are being considered.
Basically, everybody, officials, foreign ministers, active duty military commanders, they all were talking about how impressive Ukrainian army have been through this wartime, how effective they were using American and other military support in the battlefield, and how effective they were to battle Russian forces. However, everybody again agrees that today Ukraine need more than it's receiving right now to actually clear their territory and push Russians outside of Ukraine.
Was there any specific kind of warfare, weapons, things that are necessary that were kind of spelled out that Ukraine needs, or is it just more of a general, they need everything?
Basically, my understanding that Ukrainian army forces are adjusting their needs as we go. However, there are some priorities, and those priorities are long-range missiles and anti-air missiles land systems. That's the two most important things that Ukraine need today, because Ukraine are bombed almost on a daily basis. We have seen the destruction that happened today, tonight, basically, in Zaporizhia. Russians can send rockets anywhere around across Ukraine, and the defending Ukraine from this
from the air is one of the most important tasks that Ukrainian forces have. And the second task, obviously, to actually push Ukraine, push Russians out of Ukraine, it's a long-range missiles to actually help to stop those rocket launches.
Was the concern voiced at all about arming Ukraine with these long-range missiles, and perhaps they may be used in an offensive way against Russia?
Actually, I have not heard concern about that, because everybody, there was a kind of common understanding that to stop this war, Ukraine is on the way to victory, and the victory looks like clearing and liberating all the territories of Ukraine. And majority of experts and officials agreed that Ukraine needs what it's asking for. The concern was more about possibility of Putin and Russia using nuclear weapons. And that was one of the kind of red line for every discussion during the forums. And the question is it possible that they will, and what would be the response from the Western community if such things happened? And I had a chance to talk to a couple of former American generals, Ben Hodges and David Petraeus, and they both actually agreed that transatlantic community, and specifically United States, have to be ready to respond if and that's swift. The response has to be swift in case of such a disaster using nuclear weapons. And Ben Hodges, for example, said that the most effective Russian nuclear weapons when they are not used. And the United States have to send a very clear message to Putin and people around Putin that using such a weapons would be a last resort, and it would be total destruction of the Russian army, because that would be a very, very strong response from the West.
Did anyone come up with possibilities of what the rest of the world, what the United States, what Europe might do if Russia were to launch a nuclear weapon, whether it's a tactical nuclear weapon or something bigger? Any idea, any offerings of what that response might be from the West?
David Petraeus, I asked that question, and he told me that he doesn't want to talk about hypothetical, but he said that right now in United States government is preparing a range of responses, and it's right now in the talks in Pentagon and other places in Washington D.C. and with the allies in Europe. One of the possibilities that he voiced is that NATO and United States would have to destroy Russian Black Sea, and they have to destroy Russian conventional forces totally. That's one of the response. The other, they just said a range of responses from very strong additional sanctions to basically using weapons against Russia, and maybe activating some Article 5 if that would affect the NATO countries.
Thank you so much, Miroslava Gangadze from Warsaw. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A video purportedly showing a train operated by Russia's nuclear division is making the rounds on the internet and social media. So far, there's no confirmation of the video's authenticity, but that hasn't stopped concern that Russia may use a nuclear weapon in its war against Ukraine. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports the U.S. has no indication that Russia is preparing to use a nuclear weapon.
Russia has the largest stockpile of nuclear weapons in the world, and experts say it holds 10 times more tactical nuclear weapons than the United States. In March 2018, Russian President Vladimir Putin unveiled an array of new weapons, saying they could hit almost any point in the world and not be intercepted. Now that Putin is suffering military losses in Ukraine, he has threatened to use any means at his disposal to defend Russia. On Tuesday, the White House responded to unconfirmed reports that Russia may be moving nuclear weapons toward the border with Ukraine. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
We take any nuclear weapons or nuclear saber-rattling very seriously here. But I do want to say, we have not seen any reason to adjust our own strategic nuclear posture, nor do we have indication that Russia is preparing to imminently use nuclear weapons.
In the face of military losses, Russia announced a mobilization that has caused hundreds of thousands of Russians to flee the country. National security expert Mitchell Wallerstein says if Putin were to use nuclear weapons, he would break a long-time taboo. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
Were he to do so, this would be crossing a red line that no country has crossed since World War II. And the concern is that as he is increasingly cornered and finds that he has limited options, that he might try to use a small tactical nuclear weapon, much smaller probably than the ones that were used in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, to try to decapitate the Ukrainian regime in Kyiv, or to simply do a demonstration to say, look, this is what I can do.
Other experts are also concerned. James Acton is co-director of the Nuclear Policy Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
I think if this war goes in a very bad direction for Putin, I think if he's faced with a catastrophic military defeat, if his hold on power looks in jeopardy, if the Russian economy looks on the brink of collapse, then I can't rule out the possibility of Russia using nuclear weapons. I don't think it's that likely, but I think it's more likely now than at any time since the end of the Cold War, for sure.
Acton says he believes that, despite his bravado, Putin does not think he can use nuclear weapons to win the war against Ukraine.
The goal is to terrify Ukraine, its Western backers, the United States in particular, that the threat of further escalation, the threat of a even worse, all-out nuclear war could terrify them into backing down, into suing for peace, into making concessions, into giving Putin a face-saving way out.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says his forces are making rapid gains, retaking dozens of villages in eastern and southern Ukraine. Russia's defense ministry has conceded that Russian forces have retreated in the face of Ukraine's counteroffensive. Nuclear experts tell VOA that were Putin to move nuclear weapons closer to Ukraine, the U.S. would know about it. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Reddish. The European Union approved more economic sanctions against Russia on Wednesday, reacting to Moscow's annexation of Ukrainian territory, its military mobilization, and its nuclear threats. It's the eighth round of EU sanctions since Russia's war on Ukraine began in February. At the center is a price cap for transporting Russian oil by sea, making it more difficult to insure, reinsure, and finance the delivery of Russian oil to other countries, bringing the EU in line with the US and other G7 nations. A unanimous vote of all 27 EU nations is needed, requiring compromises, leading to concerns that not enough is being done. In a wide-ranging interview with VOA Russian service reporter Valentina Vasilova, European Parliament member from Germany, Michael Galler, defended the sanctions package.
You can always do still more, and this eighth package adds to the load of sanctions which have had their effect. For instance, 75% reduction of the Russian car production. You see all the companies that have closed down in Russia and people have lost their jobs. There is many people are on the sanctions list, and those oligarchs who are profiting from the system but are happy to live in the West. So we are stopping them. And we could, in the area of oil and gas, still do more. I mean, the sanctions of imports of Russian oil come into effect on the 5th of December. As a parliament, we have demanded an immediate stop. It doesn't make much of a difference anymore. There is almost no gas, perhaps a bit to Hungary, but nothing else. There is almost no gas anymore. We are getting it now from Norway, from the US, LNG, and elsewhere. So I think the sanctions have their effect, but they must be accompanied on the other side also by the support of Ukraine in the humanitarian area, in macro financial support. That means that the economy continues to go, that the hryvnia has purchasing power, and weapons. That is so important now, to deliver tanks, to push Russia back to its borders. Then we will see that a rethinking will take place in Moscow. Otherwise not, I'm afraid.
About weapons, 9 members of NATO last Sunday issued a joint statement where they said that it should be more weapons to Ukraine and it should be urgent acceptance of Ukraine to NATO. What is the position of Germany about that?
Well, Germany is not among the 9. I'm not the spokesperson of the government. I think during a war which is ongoing, we will not take any country in, because it would make us directly a partner of the war, because the obligation to support the given country that is attacked would be an immediate one. So I think it's not about NATO membership. Now, it was not before the war a burning issue. It was a lie, one of the many lies of Putin, to pretend or to say that we were about to take Ukraine into NATO. That was not the case. But it's the Russian narrative which is simply wrong. Everybody knows that it is our way of organizing society, the democracy, freedom, the ability to change a government that shakes him, that gets him in a position where he thinks his own Russians might demand it one day as well, if Ukraine is successful. So it is about not about NATO, it is about our way to organize society. But for the moment, this issue is not on the agenda, but the support with weapons, that is and must be high on the agenda.
Okay, about energy and about big energy crisis in Europe. Now we see protest in Berlin, we see protest in Prague. Do you think that this protest could change approach of European governments and they can start thinking about talking to Putin?
No, because that will not remove the source and the origin of the conflict. We are in a systemic conflict between freedom and dictatorship, between authoritarianism and the rule of law. And what we are suffering is nothing in comparison to what the Ukrainians are suffering. And by the way, also those poor Russian soldiers who are drafted and who are sent without any training to the front line as cannon fodder. Yet another of those atrocities, not against Ukrainians in this case, but this disregard of human dignity of your own citizens. And if you see where they are drafted from minority areas, in a way it's also a racist approach to have some kind of ethnic cleansing by reducing the amount of minorities in this way.
And my last question, you mentioned people, Russian people, who try to escape mobilization. What is your position? Do you think that the EU should help them to enter to the European Union or should close the borders? What is your position about that?
Well, I think there is, on the one hand, there is the legal aspect and the other one is the political and emotional aspect. Of course, when I start with the political and the emotional aspect, I mean, we have not seen huge protests in Russia against this war. And many people, well, said, oh, it's not my war, I'm at home. Or even they supported it clandestinely, yeah, because they like this policy. And now, as they are personally concerned, they suddenly discover, well, it's perhaps not so good to go to war. And so we cannot accept such people on our side with the same open arms and open hearts as the women and children that are the victims of the war from Ukraine. That is the moral or political aspect. So I have some understanding for especially those who would be hit most by people coming in and who are closing their borders. The legal aspect is a different one. I think that if a person comes and says, I'm applying for asylum, political asylum, because I'm escaping an illegal war, and if I'm caught by my state, I will have an unfair trial and come into prison. So I think from this point of view, that could amount to an asylum reason to say, yes, you have a right to get asylum, or at least what we call in German tolerating the stay, not formally granting asylum, but not sending the person home because he would be subject to an unfair trial. So that is what I could see if those who manage to come to us would then follow a certain asylum procedure.
But it will not be like temporary protection as European Union provide for Ukrainians.
Another category. I think it's also, well, that's very legalistic. It makes a difference whether an active soldier who is already in the army, so to say, deserts and then ends up in a third country. They would perhaps be interned for the time of the war, or those who are not yet in the army and who just escaped the drafting letter. Yeah. So that is another category again. But overall, it is of course morally, just imagine we have millions of Ukrainian women and children in our countries. If they suddenly meet Russian men, who would perhaps have had they decided differently, would have fought their own men. That is a difficult emotional situation that must be avoided and must be clear that we stand on the Ukrainian side and perhaps tolerate those who are escaping the war. After all, at least they will not be in a position to fight against Ukraine. That is a point where then I would say, okay, don't send them home, but not the same privileges apply. They wouldn't get a job or a possibility to ask for a job or such things. They would be supplied at a minimum, but not be equally treated like the victims of the war.
We are about 6 weeks away from the opening of the 2022 World Cup competition in Qatar. Ukraine has its eyes on hosting the 2030 World Cup. More from the AP's Charles de Ledesma.
Ukrainian Soccer Federation President Andriy Pavelko says it would be wonderful if his country launched a joint bid with Spain and Portugal to host the 2030 World Cup. Pavelko says this is the dream of millions of Ukrainian fans, the dream of people who survived the horrors of war or are still in the occupied territories and over whom the Ukrainian flag will surely fly soon. Pavelko added the project's backed by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. The leaders of the Ukraine, Spain and Portugal soccer federations have joined together at UEFA headquarters to present a campaign they hope will connect people from beyond the world of sports. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
That's going to do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on our social media platforms, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Reddish. Good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.